Welcome to Speaking Out.
We're mainly discussing land rights and economic empowerment.
Aboriginal enterprises in mining, exploration and energy.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Indigenous constitutional recognition.
With Larissa Berendt.
It's a fresh view coming up.
On ABC Radio.
So this whole idea of, not being able to access story or place or whatever, cultural authority, is not my lacking at somebody else's power. And that's good for me because we are connected. So that's why I wanted to write something about the place that I don't belong to with a love and a graciousness of all that I've received.
The Bellbird, a new book from Uwalari storyteller Nadi Simpson. This is Speaking Out. I'm Larissa Berendt. Nadi Simpson is a gifted storyteller, musician and writer whose work has left a significant mark on Australia's cultural landscape. Many of you might know her as a member of the acclaimed duo The Stiff Gins, where her powerful voice and songwriting skills have captivated audiences. But beyond her musical talents, Nadi is also an extraordinary author, known for her deeply moving debut novel, Song of the Crocodile, which has received widespread praise. Now, Nadi, my countrywoman, is back with a new book, The Bellbird, and I'm thrilled to be talking with her about it today. The Bellbird is another profound and beautifully written exploration of Aboriginal life, identity and resilience. Nadi's unique ability to weave together history, culture and personal narrative creates something truly special. Her voice, in whatever form it takes, whether through music or words on a page, is one that resonates with wisdom, heart and an immense love for community. Yama Nadi, Gulad Ninda.
Ah, Yama, my sister.
Nadi, it's always an honour to share space with you and congratulations on the new book.
Thank you very, very much.
I absolutely loved it. It is so beautiful. I've got so many questions to ask you about it, but it weaves together a contemporary story and it's like a timeless story, And I wonder, just before we get into the details of the characters and the themes, if you could tell us a little bit about what sparked your idea for this book.
I was on a train from Stanmore to Circular Quay and there were three ladies standing in that vestibule and having a yarn that, you know, you sort of can't escape. And they were talking about one of them was house hunting and how's the house hunting going? Oh, we saw this place and not enough bedrooms. Then we saw this place and not enough square feet. Then we saw this other place and there was a pool. And we thought, we'll show the kids on the weekend if they like it. Then we'll put in an offer and then the universe will decide. Stand clear. Oh, next stop, Redfern. That's how it happened. And just as I was about to, you know, death stare them about, that's not how the universe worked. And then hearing Redfern, I thought, it snapped me out of it, actually. Brought me into the place where I was instead of thinking myself into a corner or a different place. And I thought, well, what makes you think you know what the universe is, Nadi? And just that spark of Redfern, Black Sydney, you know, made me think, well, let's talk about what the universe is in this very moment. And I had known about the baby of Barangaroo and Benelong, who survived a handful of months and born at a time, you know, the inheritor for me of everything that had been and the enormity of what was to come. She was born right at that moment and I thought, well, she's the universe. And I just kept thinking about that little baby and the idea of how, a black infant is everything and all that you will ever need was where I spent my waking hours for the next few years.
It's really an extraordinary story and it weaves together almost two narratives. One is, of course, a great character, a poet, Ginny Dilbung. And I want to just ask you first what the inspiration for her was.
It was really important while I was sort of immersed in the richness of things gone by, that I had a way of saying, actually, that's not the past, it's happening today. And Ginny was made to be the embodiment of all that beautiful richness. And she's actually, you know, she's the woman I wished I was 20 years ago. She's brave, and I think she's kind of disconnected in a way, or alone, but she is fully herself in those things. And if I would have known that when I was younger, not to be fearful of being by yourself, and you know, if I would have known that, I think I would have, yeah, I would have done things very differently and got to different places, interesting places. So she's really, she is what I understand to be the beauty and the hope of all our mob, you know, as a baby is, so is a young woman. She is the everything and can be anything. And it was really important for me to have, you know, a representation of where we are now and the beauty and the strength of that.
She's a wonderful, inspiring character. But one of the things I really loved about what you brought to life with her, apart from her strength, was the way she interacted with her surroundings. And she really highlighted how a First Nations person lives on country, even in the city. There is these beautiful moments where she connects with the trees or the water, or that the way the natural world around her is also adapting to the city. These are profoundly strong stories of country and the way that might seem invisible to non-Indigenous people that a First Nations person interacts. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you developed that sensibility of her connection to water, to trees, to understanding that world while she's surrounded by concrete and noise.
Mm. Mm. I think it was important for me to make it so that you could feel this ongoing, everlasting connection, especially in an urban environment, because we often hear, you know, people say, not mob say, but non-Indigenous people say, oh, I'm going on country. And what they mean is they're going bush, when they're telling you in the middle of Sydney and you're actually on sacred land right here. So because I was born here and I have beautiful, everlasting kin connections to, you know, somewhere very different. But I feel that it's incumbent upon me to talk and celebrate the sacredness, you know, in Sydney or in urban areas, because it gives so much and it needs to be celebrated. So I think there's this kind of understanding. Ginny knows her way around natural things, but also by the fact of her sovereignty, really, as a black woman in the city, you start to see how people take for granted the sacredness in which they're living on. You know, talking about Sydney as an overpriced crap hole, you know. It is somebody's sacred land. And I think to have a character that has those obvious signs of how would you call that? Deep connection to natural places. You put them in an urban environment and that resonates even more strongly and still exists despite the landscape being altered. So she worked beautifully for me in ways that I didn't really know, because I wanted to have somebody who stands in that strong culture in the city, and you can understand that sovereignty, but also just by the interactions and the way that people thought about the city around her, then you started to feel that the delineation between urban and rural and, you know, country, on country and off country is not as simple as being out in the bush and being able to feel it.
I wondered if that was partly why I had such a strong emotional reaction to the book, which I loved on so many levels. I loved her strength. It reminded me of the women of Redfern who were running it when I was a kid, and that strength. But I think also I've never felt I've seen on the page an explanation or an exploration of what it means to be a First Nations person living with First Nations worldview in a city where we're so invisible. And even Ginny's own experience with neighbours, etc., she's got sometimes they see her differently than she really is. I thought that was extraordinary, and I don't think I've seen it in fiction that way before. And maybe it's because I also grew up in the places that you write about.
Yeah, and, you know, I felt very strongly, and I've started saying this, and, you know, I really feel it, and it's having this kind of funny effect on me when I say, you know, I was born on Sydney, but I do not belong here. And saying I don't belong, and then qualifying that with also saying it's not because I don't belong does not mean I lack. It means somebody else is the boss here. And if I have a relationship to them, they're making me strong. So this whole idea of, you know, not being able to access story or place or whatever, cultural authority, is not my lacking at somebody else's power. And that's good for me because we are connected. So that's why I wanted to write something about the place that I don't belong to with a love and a graciousness of all that I've received. That's why it came out the way it is, and I dedicated the book Ngangua Balangurumba to somebody else's homeland.
I have to say that love of country strongly comes through in the book. Now, I mentioned the interweaving stories. The other character will feel so unconventional to many non-Indigenous people, but feels really alive and so cultural, I think, to a First Nations reader. But the exploration of the character sprite, the evolution, the interaction, is quite extraordinary. How would you describe this unique character, this unique voice of Sprite?
Sprite is the before and after breathtaking. After you breathe on solid ground, Sprite is what happens, the possibility of what can happen before and the same of what can happen after, and an extension of connection and relationship and thought and development and all that kind of stuff that just takes place outside of our knowing. That's how I came at Sprite. That a lot of our mobs have all these amazing, so beautiful, Larissa, like I'm just seeing rainbows and flowers cascading from the sky, all these rich stories of how babies find mothers or how mothers take in babies. We're, as many mobs as there are, we have as that many beautiful stories of the connection before you know you're connected and the same afterwards. And Sprite is one possibility of that infinite love either side of life.
That's musician and writer Nadi Simpson. She's speaking about the creative process behind her latest novel, The Bellbird.
Speaking Out with Larissa Barron.
The knowledge, the culture, the arts, the language, the law and customs of Indigenous people.
On ABC Radio.
My guest on this episode of Speaking Out is one of my favourite Aboriginal storytellers, Nadi Simpson. She's now focusing her creative talents on writing, but Nadi's storytelling began as part of the musical duo Stiff Gins. This is a song from their latest album.
by the tree on the bend.
Tree on the bend.
The sun is shining just for us.
That's the Stiff Gins with Shields. It's a song taken from their album Spirit of Things. ULRA writer and performer Nadi Simpson makes up one half of the musical duo, and she's my guest on this episode of Speaking Out. Nadi has just released her latest novel, The Bellbird.
There is a really interesting creative choice that you make. Sprite, who is such an unconventional presence and character, you write in the first person. So we're right inside Sprite's experiences, which is, you know, kind of confronting but revealing and wonderful. And yet Ginny, who lives in the city, like in a world that many of us would understand, you write in the third person. So we sort of observe her in a different way. And I wonder how you came to make that choice of putting us right inside Sprite's world, Sprite's experiences, given that they are so unconventional. And I know people would probably use a term like magic realism, but it feels like dreaming. It feels like strong Indigenous storytelling.
Mm. It's the thing about, the reason why I decided to do that was because when you open a story with a soul egg at the bottom of a mound in an underwater cave who's grown up by an eel. For people who may not be used to thinking like that, you've got to make relationships straight away. And so to have Sprite's words in your ear means you're going to take that journey together. You've got no choice. You go together. And, you know, in opposite for Ginny, there are so many miscommunications and gritty comings together that I think also having people observe that from afar helps you understand the kind of the irritation of those very fleeting yet significant conflicts, really. So placing people close to something they may not be used to and away from something that they may recognise helps, you know, make those moments much more resonant, I think.
It totally does. It's an extraordinary thing to find yourself feeling what is a non-human experience, in a sense, you know. And I wonder how you found the voice. There wasn't a single time when I was on Sprite's journey where I didn't feel like I could feel or sense what Sprite was doing, and all of these things that we take for granted, like skin or feet or bones, you're kind of in a world where they aren't there, and then you discover them. It's the most extraordinary piece of writing, Nadi, and I wonder how you found that voice.
I think that the very fact of Sprite being blubber, you know, jelly, this kind of unformed thing, and having her wonder what a brain might be and what it could be encased in, and then thinking, well, how are my thoughts going to be connected to that? Because it's at its elemental growth stage. I think that that's a really human thing, you know, that we're actually talking about the structures that we all share, despite our cultural and societal and religious and whatever political differences. We're actually being part of the making of a new person together. And so I think that the physicalities And then also, you know, turning to ash at the end, having gone through that period of making yourself and then feeling yourself disintegrate. You know, everybody, no matter where they're from, is worried about that time and planning for that time and thinking about that time or engaging with that time when we are no more. So I think there's something, oh, I don't know what the word is, innately human, that you can invest in the journey of a body taking a shape before all the layers of otherness come in and sort of depart us from that physiological sameness.
The other achievement, I thought, with that strand of the writing, that strand of the story, was it gave such gravitas, or such weight, such momentous respect for the life that comes, which by human standards, how we would judge as so fleeting. But you give us a journey that really honours everything that has to come together for that first breath. And I guess my question around that is, was that part of the intention? And what drew you to Bellbird? What was the other really fascinating thing? We hear so much about Barangaroo and Patagarang and the other women.
Mm.
This child, this special child, is not so much a part of our folklore, but you have brought that child's story to life and really honoured it because of the way you've given it this sort of a huge context. And so I was wondering what drew you to Bellbird and the longevity of that story.
Well, when I knew on the train that you know, she popped into my head, and when I knew I was going to listen to what it was I could make, I gave myself the rule that I will not tell any of her life story. And also, if you make that thing for yourself, then, you know, I'm going to extend that to Bennelong and Barangaroo because they're pretty powerful people and I'm not mucking around with them. But, you know, I also, the thing when you get your name on a book or something, you become some type of authority. And despite the fact that I was drawn to Dilbung, the daughter of those two really important people, I got no business mucking around in their lives. And so, you know, thinking about who this, it's actually the shade of the bird. Thinking about how I could create a shadow or a shade, from the actual, from that child, led me to think about time before birth and time after death. And that's why the story was shaped in the mound, in the round of the mother's belly, and then in the ground. Those were places that I felt I had space and agency to use my love of language and ideas to play, not to interpret and not to tell, but to use the way I love getting through the world to sort of hold space for the boss story, which is the one that Dilbung and Bennelong and Barangaroo's family are the only ones who have the right to tell. And I went to an award ceremony where the Australian History nominees were, four out of the five works were all First Nations, about First Nations people or communities or landscapes or knowledge, and not one of the authors was black. And that hit me in the guts, and I thought, I'm not going to do the same. That's why the story has the structure, the way it is, because I wanted to stay away from the things that I didn't have the right to tell. And by doing that, it wasn't my loss. It's somebody else's space but my gain in relationship.
People listening to this conversation are going to probably be wondering how the stories of Ginny and Sprite interact. And I have to say, one of the things we say about Indigenous writing is that in it, country is a character. I feel that's very strongly in what you've brought to life. But the other thing that's so essential, so fundamental in First Nations philosophy and worldview is interconnectedness. And one of the things I really enjoyed about the book, and I should say, you don't just bring in the urban area, the country, but the sea country as well in the harbour. But the other thing about our worldview, of course, is our interconnectedness. And the way that you weave the story about an eel mother to a worm in a pot plant, from ancestors to the future, the circle of life and its continuity, felt to me like such a First Nations worldview in the storytelling. So for me, I felt like those stories intertwined naturally. But how do you explain the way that these two, to many people, would seem very unrelated stories are actually completely intertwined?
How would I explain? I just think like that.
And I think, of course you do, because you're a First Nations person with a First Nations worldview.
And, you know, it's not even, it's all in the, how would I say it? Everything's in the ballpark. And the beautiful thing is learning about how, or seeing on a page, this is something I'm getting to know better, how two kind of absolutely unrelated things are family on a page when they're held in that kind of, in the confidence maybe of all connection. That's probably the best way I can talk about it. I mean, I write a lot by feel, so when things work, I can't really tell you the technical reasons of why, if there is any at all, but I have the faith, confidence, knowing that because I'm trying to make something that is relevant to the people and the places and the knowledges that I come from, it's all going to work. It's all going to make sense. I got to work hard, but it's all going to relate because I'm inviting that type of connection to shape my ideas.
It feels so effortless and uncontrived, and maybe that's because it is how you see the world.
I can get into some pretty, like, you know, when I start talking at as you may know, meetings, and I can get a little bit out there and sort of, but, you know, sometimes there is a way that all that stuff, that, you know, that kind of the, what is it, procedural, critical, analytical things can also sit beside these out there seemingly intangible moments. Yeah. So when that happens, when that can happen, you know, your creative world is endless.
Was there a challenging part to writing the book?
Well, before I started, I wrote a whole list of things I didn't want to do. So, yes, I got in my own way. And that was, you know, I'm actually very grateful that I can say that now, because I feel very deeply my learning from that, you know, that I wanted, and also my ego. What I was, you know, I was trying to, I'm just trying not to be egotistical in what I wrote, but how I wrote, I didn't extend that to then, because I thought I didn't want it to look like Song of the Crocodile. I didn't want long sentences and, you know, lyrical things. I wanted to be, you know, blocky and concrete-y and sort of urban in that way. And, of course, I didn't write anything for 2 years because, you know, all these things that I am okay at that I probably should develop rather than drop, I took off the menu. So I got in my own way trying to think about what I wanted to be. Yeah. Instead of listening and making, I was going to say co-making. I think that's a thing. Co-making with I don't know who or what, but being part of a team that included, you know, whatever. That beautiful saltwater country that I got nothing to do with but has fed me, yeah. And, you know, all the streets and the buildings and the smog and the buses that I've breathed in for the last 50 years, I got in the way of listening to those things. And that was the hard thing. Standing here now, I'm sort of, it's a bit shame for me to think. I was so far down the track thinking about the end product before I had my mungas, my ears open and listening. So I got there in the end, and hopefully next time I go, I'll learn from that again.
Well, it is beautiful and lyrical, and I hope everyone who's been listening to us yarning away are so intrigued that they're going to be delighted that I'm going to ask you to do a reading. You can even have my copy of the book.
Thank you. Were you ever a bubble, a soul egg like me? I asked. No, she replied. Her all over grey was now twinkling with sad specks of gold. I came straight from a mother and had brothers and sisters galore. Through a stretchy smile, she took in a gulp, then fanned it out her gills. The jets creased the water so that thousands of wiggly strips burst out and jiggled upstream. Their flapping looked funny. For some reason, I felt sad watching her family dissolve into the openness. When will I get my family? I asked her. Brothers and sisters would probably be fun, and a father would be good to have too, although I didn't know much about them. All I really hoped for, more than anything in my bubbly, watery life, was a mother, in the above, waiting just for me. Eel Mother scooped me up and slithered us into the dark of her cave. Beneath me, her head and body turned nighttime blue. She was so dark, she was shining. Her twinkly gold flecks got happier and brighter. Her body's flickering reflection bounced off the cave walls and shone a pathway to the back of her lair. Her movement and shine made strange shapes rise up the walls. Eel Mother was good at that sort of thing. She always showed me stuff I didn't know was there. The mound emerged. Gazillions of fidgeting birth spirit balls were stacked on top of each other, towering into a fine point. The soul eggs were mostly pearl-coloured. I loved that the rows of birth spirit heads were cradles for the bums of those above. For them and for me, heads and bums weren't actual things yet. If they were, I'd be gazing into seas of them, all squished into each other.
Beautiful. You've spoken in the past about the importance of storytelling in Aboriginal culture. Of course, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're not just an accomplished writer, you're also, particularly in the Aboriginal community, a very famous musician. But how do you see your role as a storyteller in today's world?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think, this is how I get around. I am lucky enough to spend time thinking about creative things. And at moments, ideas will be gifted to me, whether it's for a song or a story or a little bit of knowledge I need to go and suss out for myself. These things, these things float above me and then come into my sphere. I'm looking at them, and I get to sit and make within that idea that has been gifted to me. And then when it's time, it leaves. And that's how the big ideas in my life, or the significant projects that I have learnt and grown from, have been gifts. And so if I know that that can be true, what a beautiful inheritance. So if I have any kind of role and any use to people that I'm close to, it will be to encourage them to allow those things that are greater than us, those ideas and stories, to come through us and know us for a while and continue on. That's what I think I can be of service in. And it doesn't need to be the type of stories that I do. I can see, I know, I see it in other mob when that has happened to them. And so this idea of us all being, or walking around and being open and connected to ideas that are much bigger and greater than us and coming through us, is something that I think I can encourage people to follow.
Well, I think the other thing that you've encouraged people to follow is, of course, the learning of Yuwalari language. I've, in conversation with you before, acknowledged that your role in regenerating our language, in using it in song as part of storytelling, has inspired myself, my brother, a couple of cousins. We're all learning the language now, and that's something you've given us, inspired us to do. What's that connection to your language, to our language, given you?
Yeah, it's given me a way to approach English that is unlike other people, you know, like it's really given me a way to use English, even though I'm not a native Yuwalari speaker. I sit in relationship to language knowledge, and I don't try to acquire, I try to learn and listen within its rules, yeah. And so bringing those rules into English has allowed me to use, you know, narrative in a really exciting way for me anyway. And just talking about language, see, that me getting around with language was gifted to me too. And continually, I'm really lucky. I spend a lot of time with Tracy Cameron. She's a Gamilaroi woman from Burrabaddy, and she's like my language mentor. And she was talking about a word in our language, Uruday. And I said, well, how does that work? And she said, well, uni, uri means to give. The DHA in the Uruday, they, is the reciprocal suffix. And I went, what? She said, it's a thing we put on certain, well, we can put on any word, but it will change depending on what type of the word, what the word type is. But it's a tail, or let's say it's a part of a word that means reciprocated. That just blew my mind, that our whole language structure has a thing for me and you giving to each other all the time. Or giving to each other. Reciprocal suffix. I'm going to think about that for years. Anyway, and the last part of that word is continuous. So she was saying urudei means continuous reciprocal giving. And we can make that in our language. let alone the mind-blowing concept of that. Give, 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 give. I give, you give, I give, you give. And that is how it is. No take, but language tells us we can make a word that is just endless giving to each other. That's why I sit at the feet of, you know, at the foot. Yeah, sit at the foot of our language and the people who are doing all that hard work to get concepts like that to us and our kids and everybody else, because that concept is a lifetime of learning, but, you know, it's an exultant way to be, continuous reciprocal giving. And language is gifted that way to think, to me. And so then when I write, I think, how can I do that kind of way justice? How can I muck around with English to show urade? It's a beautiful way to spend my time.
Well, Nadi Simpson, Gubba Ninda.
Ah, Gubba.
Gubba Ninda for your voice, your vision, your wisdom, and for keeping our culture strong. And Gubba Ninda for this extraordinary, beautiful book that I just recommend everyone to read. It's just an extraordinary piece of writing. So Gubba Ninda.
Thank you.
That's my conversation with Yuwalaray storyteller Nadi Simpson. A musician and writer, her latest novel, The Bellbird, is available through Hartshead Australia. We'll leave you now with some more music from Nadi Simpson as part of the duo Stiff Gins. This one is called Intertwined. That's the show for now. Join us again next time for more stories from across Indigenous Australia. Speaking Out is produced by Jay McAllister, and as always, you can find us on the ABC Listen app or on social media via ABC Indigenous, along with our Titter Show Away, hosted by Rudy Bremer. I'm Larissa Berendt, and this is Speaking Out. Thank you.